Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for July the 1st, 2022. This is episode number 117. Happy Canada Day and happy early America Day. I guess you call it the 4th of July here. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Cadillac Lyriq, the reveal of the Hyundai Ioniq 6, and the debut of the Volkswagen Aero concept. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today, we hope, is the missing Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, we also have the Renaissance polymath, Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of the European offices of AutoSpec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video gets published. And if you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Welcome.
Good morning, right. Dominic.
Morning.
Good morning. All right. So hopefully Martin will join us at some point. I'm not sure what he's doing. He mentioned something about being on a track or something. I don't know. Yeah. And no one's been in touch. Okay. We'll see if he shows up. But anyway, so let's talk about what we've been driving this week because there's been a bunch of stuff going on. So Kyle, let's start with you and Plaid paint. So you took delivery of a Tesla Model S Plaid. That's the fast one. Last week?
I think it was just about 7 days ago or 14 days ago. I can't remember, but I think it was on a Friday.
So you took it to your friends at, I believe it's called, you can correct the name if I have it wrong, but Clear Detailing. So you took your car there and had them and analyze the paint of that and the Rivian and a Honda Civic, I believe. And then, so you did some comparison there, but then you also took your Plaid car, Plaid back, and had them kind of go over the paint and kind of try to fix it up and make it like a better. So anyway, maybe you can just tell us about that process a little bit and how the paint was.
So the paint from the naked eye, when we first got it, you know, I asked Tesla not to wash the car, not to do anything. We picked it up dusty and dirty from transport, and it's a black car and it's a flat black paint. And I'm not, you know, there's one or two ways that I approach this. It's like, oh, I'm super nerdy and want paint to be perfect, or I'm going to trash it and run it through a car wash every day. And you kind of have to choose, because if you decide to run it through the car wash once, that could be the end of it, especially with such soft black paint as this car. So we decided to get a really nice baseline on it. Colton went through and totally paint corrected all of the issues in the car, and there were many. We have a whole video on that process. We then mounted a set of Martian wheels, MW05 style, in 20-inch by 10.5, so real meaty wheels and tires, Michelin Pilot Sport 4S's, and now it looks the part. And so the paint's ceramic coated, totally protected, perfect underneath, big chunky wheels and tires. Now we just need to do brakes and around steering wheel, and she'll be done.
Brakes and around steering wheel, nice. So how did the paint compare to, like, so you took the Rivian in there as well, and they measure the paint some thickness and different things or something?
Yeah, and it's hard to say because it's one example of a Tesla against one example of a Rivian, and each car is different. So it was more just to get a general idea. One car was white, one car was black, but they were both flat paint, which actually kind of is somewhat comparable. And I would say they were almost on the same level. The Rivian, after really digging into the Model S, seemed to be a little bit better than the Tesla's paint quality in terms of defects and just, you know, a lot of the issues with the Tesla were done by people in the quality control at the factory. They would see an issue and then try and fix it, and they would just leave scratches and swirls and just crazy stuff everywhere. Either the Rivian was definitely looked after and they fixed a few spots and it's not perfect. And then we just pulled in a Honda Civic and we're like, oh yeah, okay, that's pretty good. So it just comes down to, you know, these cars are not painted amazing, but most automakers aren't, unless you're talking Rolls-Royce level, Lamborghini level. That's where you're getting into, you know, real high quality paint from the factory.
I recall,
you know, when I had my Model 3, my 2019, it was black, and I have the 2021 now. The first thing was take it to get ceramic coating and have the paint, you know, just corrected. And it was like the second day that I owned it, I didn't want to touch it with a rag or anything. And so I took it and the guy was like, yeah, you know, with Teslas, it's usually extra work. So I have to add an extra $150 onto this, what I usually charge a car of this size or whatever. I get home, the guy called me up. He goes, I just want to let you know, it's going to be $500 more. He said, because I just did a good look at this. He said, I'm going to spend 2 days just fixing things before I can ceramic coat it. He said, so I'm just letting you know. He goes, otherwise you can come take your car back. I won't touch this if I can't do everything that I want to do. So I was like, nah, go ahead, roll with it. And yeah, it took like 4.5 days for me to get it back. That was going to be like 2.5 days. And he was just like, dude, he goes, this thing, he goes, it's one of the worst cars I've ever seen. But that was 2019. And like Kyle said, you pick your fights. You know, Tesla does so many good things with their cars. You have to understand that when you get it, there's going to be things that they don't do as well as the existing OEMs. And, you know, for quite honestly, Kyle, for most people with the naked eye, they don't even notice the difference, you know, and but you will notice it down the road, because a couple of things he pointed out was how some of the paint was so thin in some areas. And he's like, look, in a couple of years without a good ceramic coating or good covering on this, this is going to wear through. And he's like, you know, I don't want to see what this car would look like if you just never waxed it or never ceramic coated it, parked it out in the sun every day for a couple of years, because it's going to look like a 10-year-old car in 2 years in some areas. So that's unfortunate, but you pick your fights. Tesla does a lot of things really well. They don't paint cars well.
There's a comment here. CID 2001 says, for 130,000 K, what is to understand? You shouldn't have to fix paint. But, you know, that's the way it is. Even cars like Ferrari, a lot of different high-end cars. John Neff was telling us there's a place in Ohio that does paint correction like that, and high-end cars, like someone buys a Ferrari, they take it immediately to get the paint corrected and taken care of. Even the, you know, like,
yeah, this is not unique to Tesla, and I think that's maybe brought up because of Tesla, and Tesla owners have gotten into this. But this is something I've done with BMWs in the past, Porsches I've owned in the past, and I've always just done this with a car that I, you know, a nice car I intend on keeping nice. And some require more work, some require less. The Tesla, in my case, this one needed a lot of work. It took Colton a full 7 days of work to get it where it needs to be, you know, 50 plus hour detail job. But, you know, he works on 911 Turbo S's that require very similar amount of work. It's not a Tesla unique thing. Right. It's just, you know, where I wanted the paint to be, where he wanted the paint to be, is something factories don't do.
And, I was going to say, and he says, yeah, each even Tesla is, you know, every car is like slightly different from the other one. One like yours is like this way. It took 7 days. Maybe another one might only take a half of that time. I don't know. But your car looks great with the deep black shine, man. If you haven't seen it, you can go to Kyle's Twitter. It's Kyle Connor. And I think you have some pictures of it there and some recent tweets. And yeah, it looks like deep shine. Like, but so when you go over afterwards, I could still see, like, where you fix some scratches, you can still kind of see like the scratch a little bit though, right?
There's two marks on the car that are not able to be fixed because they were scratched all the way through the paint. Okay. And we made the determining factor not to go crazy aggressive to fix those. This car is meant to be a driver. Right. And so that means full protection detail. Now, we probably could have blended some even more things, but we wanted to leave as much paint on the car as possible. Yeah, this paint, according to Colton, was like the hardest paint he's ever worked with in the way that it was like soft, warm butter. And he's like, everything's just moving around. It wasn't great. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still a car that was just freshly painted. It is solid black. It's not an easy job. And that's why I'm glad I took it to an expert. And yeah, it looks great now. It's sitting in the garage and looks wonderful.
Sweet. So this week you also attended like the Rivian, first Rivian Adventures Network of DC Chargers launch or something. Did you have a video? Can you tell what I didn't watch. I watched some detailing video, but, and, that was great. It was interesting to see Colton very excited about, you know, what he does. And, but I, so I didn't watch this Rivian Adventures thing. So maybe you could fill us in on what's going on with that.
Yeah. And it's not even just my video. It's the launch of an entirely new charging network this week in the US. Okay. And it's a, you know, full from the ground up, from hardware to software to everything, completely bespoke, completely new. So it's super exciting. And essentially, yeah, Rivian launched their first site in Colorado. It's a, you know, full speed capable 500 amp CCS unit in Colorado, Salida, Colorado. They invited me out to come make a video of the opening, which was super great. So I got to be the first to plug in my truck along with my friends Scott and Ryan, who both also own Rivian R1Ts. We plugged three in at the same time, and exciting to see the launch of a brand new charging network in the US.
Yeah. So do you know how many chargers they're planning on installing? I read somewhere on Twitter that I don't know if it's a bad rumor that they were planning for 600, but they've backed off from that number.
My understanding is that 600 number still stands. The okay. timing has sort of evaporated. We don't know how long it's going to take them. But the thing is, this is an adventure network is what they're branding it. So it's designed to get you to places you would want to go enjoy. So it's not necessarily going to be the traditional take on DC fast charging. It is entirely new hardware, which we can geek out about if you want to. It's pretty interesting how they're doing everything. And then their locations are going to be, you know, sort of adventure focused. I hope at least, you know, trailheads, right. places you'd want to go, Yosemite, up in the Rockies and Colorado, things like that.
Right.
But Kyle, from what I understood, and I thought the number was 3,500 charge points. Was it 600 locations with 3,500? Units.
I had never heard the 3,500 number, but it's possible
that might include that might include the level two chargers too, though. So you got to get clarity on that. I'm pretty sure 3,500 is the number of charge points, but that might include the level two chargers. Did they talk at all about having it open to everybody? I know initially it's only going to be used by the DC fast chargers are only going to be available for Rivian customers, but they also kind of hinted, I think a few times in the past, eventually they're going to open that up. Did they talk at all about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of that was the general consensus. They're like, of course, you know, I don't think they said verbatim, of course, we're going to open it up. But, you know, I was talking to some of the engineers and I'm like, yeah, it's Rivian only. It's doing plug and charge with Rivian, not ISO 15118, but their own proprietary communication. And, you know, I was like, so once you figure out payment processing, you'll open it up. And they're like, yeah, kind of. That's the idea. I just don't think they have a way to bill for it quite yet. And honestly, it's better for them to launch a network that's vertically integrated with the trucks, matching the hardware so they can see everything, make sure it all works, get all the bugs worked out, and then open up their network. But it seems to me that it's going to be open. And I'm not going to speak on their behalf. They never officially in any capacity said they would. And it's very possible they won't. But it seems like that's the direction they're going in more than likely.
I'll go a little bit further. I don't think it's possible that they won't, only because of the cost to maintain and operate the network. And let's face it, they're not going to be a high volume manufacturer for many years. You know, no matter how fast they scale up, look how long it took Tesla to get to volume, you know. They're going to need that revenue, in my opinion, because these networks cost so much money to put in the ground and then to continue to operate. And if they don't get high utilization, the cost per charging session is through the roof with demand chargers. You need that utilization to bring that down. So, I mean, it would be crazy on their part if they didn't open it up for everybody. So we'll see that. And another thing, I know you pointed out that they're meant to have access to the trails, but what they're also, from what I understood is, it's not just going to be right near the trails. Like, they're going to open up corridors that lead you to the trails. So they'll have these charging stations set up for hundreds of miles away from the trails. So even if you live hundreds of miles from the trailhead that you want to go to, or, you know, you'll be able to hop on their charging network corridor and follow it up to the trail. So it's not like they're just going to have these things at the trailheads and, well, you got to figure out how to get there. They're going to lead you to there, which is really important, in my opinion.
Yeah, there was no talk about sort of site locations or any future ideas. It was only about this one particular site when I was there. No conversation about other places they were going other than the two opening in California that are open now, Inyokern and Bishop. And you know, I think they're just going to kind of put them wherever they can, more or less. It seems like if you look at the map, you know, they have a planned map of where they want them. You know, you're going to have sections along highways. You're going to have sections that go to trails. You know, it's just going to be a mix, but certainly seemingly a focus on places Rivian owners would want to charge rather than just Walmart parking lot to Walmart parking lot.
So no. Leonard asks, do they use ISO plug-in charge protocol or something special?
So they're not using ISO 15118. They're currently using a newer standard that I can't remember the name of, but I have it in my brain somewhere.
It's a bunch of numbers?
Nope, it's a bunch of letters and some other stuff. But essentially, it's proprietary communication back and forth. I believe they will also activate with ISO 15118, but there's other protocols that they could use for plug-in charge.
And George asks, on watching us on Facebook, do y'all think that Rivian will have their own app to charge? It feels like that I have will have 20 apps to charge between different networks as more emerge.
Yeah, sounds like it'll be similar. My guess is to the Tesla Supercharger network, similar to their Waypoint chargers, where you load up the Rivian app, activate the charger.
Right. So an app for each network, basically.
Probably. I mean, that's kind of how it is today.
Right.
We, you know, eventually we'll need something like in Europe, there's a card called PlugShare, which is what we use that activates cross network. There's a lot of roaming. We also see it with ChargePoint and EVgo, for example, as a, you know, as one example. So we'll see more roaming.
Eric says on YouTube, the nice thing about standards is that there are so many to choose from. Little joke there. Okay. So you had a video on your channel, but you were not in it. Like, you were in a lot of your videos, but now you've been kind of branching out and having other people host some videos. So you had Jordan Golson, who is a well-known, you know, automotive writer and a video guy. He's I've heard great things. I don't know Jordan personally, but I've heard great things about him. So you had him do a video for you in Spain where he got to try out the Lightyear Zero solar electric car. Took a first look. I don't know. Did you edit that video, or are you super familiar with that car at all?
Yeah, I was supposed to be there, but actually got some travel mixed up stuff. So he covered for me, which was great. He was already going to be at the event, so we hired him to film that video for us. And yeah, I thought it came out okay. I mean, it wasn't nerdy level where I would bring it to, right? But at least we got a video out of the event, so. That was good, but seems my impression is it's a very expensive car, 260,000 euros, covered in solar panels that only peak seem to make 600 watts. And then, like, anyone spending 260 grand on a car has a garage you can charge it in. And, you know, if you got to go long distance, you're going to fly. So it just seems pretty dumb to me. I can't really find a reason as to why I would personally recommend or own that vehicle, but Jordan seemed to find a lot of positives out of it. I'm not sure I would have been as kind in my review.
Right. So it's a weird car, but a lot of people are excited about it, but man, so it's got like a 60 kilowatt hour battery, like a Chevy Boltish kind of thing, I guess. 388 miles per charge, 174 horsepower. So it's 0 to 60 is like 10 seconds around, not super quick, not terrible, but not great either. Top speed is 100 miles an hour. Well, in today's terms, 10 seconds to 60 is kind of like
it just is like pokey. It doesn't do anything great, and it looks butt ugly. I am sorry, but it's a terrible looking car.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's definitely made for aero and for also having the big surface to put solar panels on.
See, what they should have done was charged 260 grand for a 6x6 monster truck electric, and they would have sold a million more of them.
Right. Well, I mean, they say they're going to make 946 with prices starting at 263,000, I guess euros, that's a lot of money. I don't know how they're going to sell 946 of those. But anyway, I guess we have our own solar car in the U.S. called the Aptera. It's got one fewer wheel. And I'm not sure how they, I wonder how the aero compare on those two vehicles, because the Aptera is made like a Cessna, basically a very very aerodynamic. I guess the solar car is too. Anyway, a little interesting thing that I wanted to mention. It's on your channel that people can check out if they're interested in that solar car. So Tom, you did some interesting experimentation this week. So I see I've got to pull up a graph for you too. But so Tesla Supercharger versus Electrify America with CCS1 adapter, which charges faster? So you put this video on your State of Charge channel. So I don't know. I've got a graph here. I got to pull up for it. And but tell us what you're doing there.
So what I did first was, as you know, I made a video last week about adapters, and I had all the different EV adapters and explained them. And I talked about the three different Tesla CCS1 adapters that I have: the C-Tech, the one from EV Hub, that's a Ukrainian company, and the one that Tesla makes. I had all three of them and did some comparison. I'm having difficulty with the other two getting them to work. The Tesla one obviously worked. It works flawlessly for me every time I've used it. I have heard some people have had some issues with it, but for me, it works. Now, your car has to be CCS1 enabled. You have to check in the settings first, because some cars aren't. Tesla only started making the vehicles CCS1 enabled in mid-2020, but then they were making them for a while, and then the part shortage issue caused them to stop for like a few months of manufacturing. So you can't just go buy, oh, I have a 2021 and so it's CCS1 enabled. You have to check in the settings, because I had a lot of people reach out to me, say, hey, I have a 2021. It's not enabled. Why is this? And that's the reason why. So in any event, I wanted to do a full 0 to 100% charge recording with the CCS1 adapter and just make a video on that. But as I'm doing this, I'm looking at it and I'm like, this thing is rocking. You know, it was pulling 100 up to 185 kilowatt. And it was charging super fast. And as I'm doing the video, I'm like thinking to myself, this is like as fast as I charge on a supercharger, which I wasn't expecting it to be quite as fast. Maybe I should have, but I just wasn't. I didn't give it a lot of thought. So when I got home, I pulled up my V2 and V3 supercharger recordings that I've done with my car, and I watched them. And then I'm looking and I'm like, Christ, the CCS1 adapter charged faster time-wise than both the V3 and the V2. So then I said, okay, the video is going to change. I'm going to not just do this on the CCS1 adapter. I'm going to compare it to my supercharger recordings, which I did. And it charged the car from 0 to 100% quicker. It charged it from 0 to 80%, I think like 9 minutes quicker, 8 minutes quicker than the V3 supercharger. But then when you dive into it, there's a caveat that I have to mention here, and it's an important caveat. When I did my V3 supercharger, and I've done it a few times, and it was all about the same within a minute or two of the charging record. So I feel comfortable using that one that I had. The car was new. It was a year ago, and I've had some capacity loss. And also, when I did the V3 supercharger recording that you see on that chart, it was right after I finished a 70-mile-an-hour highway range test, and I drove much further than zero. With the CCS1 adapter, because I wasn't planning on comparing it to the supercharger, I only drove about 5 or 6 miles past zero. So two things happened. There was a bigger battery when I did the V3 supercharger, and I used more of the capacity during this charging session. So at the end, when it was completely done with the CCS1 adapter, the car said that I had consumed or taken in 70 kilowatt hour. When I did the V3 supercharger, it said I took in 75 kilowatt hour. So it kind of throws off the direct comparison, because now I'm charging a larger battery. And I explained this in the video. I still think it was worthwhile putting it up, because while the data isn't perfect here, it's interesting that, Jesus, you know, it actually charged my car quicker. What I'm going to do actually today, only 4 or 5 days after I did the CCS1 charger, I'm going to take my car back to a V3 supercharger. I'm going to drive it 6 miles past zero like I did with the CCS1. And do a 0 to 100 recording. And now I'll have apples to apples, and I'll put that out again. But this is super interesting. You take a look at the time to charge and the charging curve, and the CCS1 adapter on the EA stations did a really good job. I'm not saying it's better or faster. I think what you take out of this is that you're not losing anything. If you happen to find a 350 kilowatt Electrify America DC fast charger and you charge with the, the CCS1 adapter, you're not at a disadvantage than if you found a Tesla supercharger. It's going to charge basically the same. I mean, we're talking within a minute or two either way. So most people, I mean, Kyle and I maybe, you know, go crazy over a minute or two from 10 to 80 or whatever, but the average person won't even realize it. So I think that's the one thing to bring out of this is, look, if you do a lot of road tripping and you're driving, frequently drive far with your Tesla and it's CCS1 enabled, it's worthwhile picking up the Tesla CCS1 adapter. I wouldn't recommend getting the other adapters. I'd recommend getting the Tesla one and using it. If you don't go on frequent road trips, it's a waste of time getting it, honestly, because there's enough Tesla superchargers the times that you do need to drive far to just use one of those.
And where do you get the Tesla adapter?
So right now, Tesla's only selling it in South Korea. So there's a bunch of people online that are buying a bunch of them over there and importing them and selling them. So you're going to get it through a secondhand retailer. So if you don't need it now, just wait until Tesla offers it here. They're going to offer it here. I don't know when, but they're going to at some point. But if you really want to get one, you just do a Google search online. They're on eBay on a bunch of different channels. I've had people that have said that they picked them up for as little as $400. They work fine. I mean, they work great. That's the one.
Yeah. I just got mine for $350 off of like Harumio or something like that.
And Kyle, how is that? Because Tesla sells it for more than that in South Korea. Like, I don't understand how they're selling them for less than what Tesla's selling for. I think people are getting them directly from the manufacturer in China or wherever they're being made for like lower. And because how can you undercut the source that it's coming from?
Right.
Not our problem. Get it. No, I know, but it's like on the ones that were really cheap, I was like, I'm not going to order it there because that's got to be a scam. They can't be selling it and losing money, you know. And I'm just going to send my money and get scammed. But you're telling me you bought one for less, so that's great.
Yeah. Well, so my friend Drew had the Harumio wherever he bought it from. Yeah, and Brandon just commented 309. I don't remember. And so apparently they're 230 from Tesla and there's a markup to 309 on Harumio. But either way, it's pretty inexpensive for the usefulness of it. The one thing, because I charged on it this week with one, it's rated for 300 amps, but it's requesting the full 500 from the charger, which is what you're showing here. And on Model S or X with higher pack voltage, you'll even get another 20 or 30 kilowatts on top of what you got with your Model 3, just because that car has a higher pack voltage than Model 3. And that's the big question, is why is it rated for 300 amps and still doing 500 for a pretty long period of time?
Yeah, no, I know. You know, the only thing that I can say is when I talked to the guys at EV Hub, when I bought the adapter from them, they also said they're it's rated at 400 amps, but they said, but you'll be able to pull more than that for, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes with no problem. It's built so that it can handle more than that for a short period of time. So I assume it's the same thing with the Tesla.
So they must put their nominal rating on there and have it coded, because the unit itself is dumb. It's just doing the translation. So it's going to take whatever the car is requesting. I guess there must be a peak period as to which it can handle more than whatever is listed on the box.
Yeah. And Tesla knows that these things are going to be used at charging stations that can deliver, you know, more than 300 amps. So they wouldn't engineer something that they know is going to fail. So, I mean, I would think that at least.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's Tesla. It's not some guy in his garage making adapters. You know, I would expect, because it would be super bad on them if a Tesla manufactured adapter melted and messed up your car or whatever, you know, charging it, you know, they'd have to fix it, you know,
right. So that would be bad.
Yeah. So the short of it was, I'm super impressed with this thing. If you do a lot of road trips, I think it'd be great to pick one up. If you don't do a lot of road trips, don't waste your money, because you don't need it. You know, there's enough Tesla superchargers out there that you could charge at, unless you live in an area where the superchargers are always clogged up, like California. There's certain areas where you're waiting in the queue. That's not really the case yet with Electrify America and other sites. It's going to be at some point. But most of them, at least, at least here in New Jersey, I can always plug in. they're starting to get filled up. And, you know, Kyle's doomsday report is getting close to happening, but it's not yet here, at least.
We need more chargers like crazy right now. There's so many.
What we need
coming.
is not more chargers.
No.
What we need is to figure out how to make charging profitable quickly. Once you can make money from DC fast charging, they will be expanded everywhere.
You just need higher utilization, Kyle, in my opinion. I mean, you know, you need more EVs on the road, and that's look at Electrify America.
That helps
now.
With ratcheting.
Yeah, look at Electrify America now. That they must, they're like every 6 months, they're nearly like doubling the amount of utilization they're getting. And, you know, that's getting to the point where they're, you know, I mean, there's been networks that have said they're profitable already. I mean, we don't look at their books, but you know, there's, I think it was it Shell with the recharge network in Europe, whatever, they said they're already profitable. So,
yeah,
I mean,
it's all utilization. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, we just and you see it now. I mean, for years, Kyle and I would pull up to charging stations. We'd do recordings, and it was great. I could put cameras. I could set up lights. I had a little tent that I used to set up next to my car if it was in the summer. But now it's like I'm checking the app before I get there to see if there's any slots open. You know, and hopefully, like the other day, I was doing a charge recording on a car that can accept over 200 kilowatt, and there's an ID4. In the one 350 kilowatt station that I need. And there's 450 kilowatt stations open. So as I pull up, I'm like, well, hopefully, you know, he hasn't been here. I pull up, the freaking thing's on like 8% state of charge, and it's just slogging around. So I knock on the window and I'm like, listen, you know, I explained to him, I'm like, would you mind just pulling it over? I said, you know, I you know, I'm not going to, you know, you can stay here. You're here first, but it's not going to charge. And the guy was arguing with me that station will charge his car faster. He's telling me it'll be 20 minutes faster if he uses that station. And I'm like, that's really not how it works. And he got insulted that I was telling him he's wrong. So he just rolled up his window. So I'm like, all right, I drove away and came back like an hour later and plugged in. But it's that's what we're looking at soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone has recommendations on a DC fast charger for Tom and I to review, let us know. We just need our own. I'm done dealing with the public networks to do our charging recordings.
We
got a site ready to go in. We just need to get a unit. It's so frustrating, Tom's experience. I have to drive an hour and a half one way to get to a 500 amp capable charger. It's on a shared unit, so if someone else is there, I actually can't even get the full power because it's a split power level.
Gotcha.
And it's so frustrating too.
I actually have one not too far from where I live. That's a private one that I could use. And it's from a manufacturer at their facility, but it's unfortunately the total opposite direction of where I usually do my range tests and everything. So it's like 30 miles in the wrong direction. And so it's not convenient for me. It would have been great if it was just in a little bit of a different location. I might use it in the future, but I that happened recently, Kyle. I haven't talked to you about it. I actually have like one that I could use that'll give me a consistent charge recording. So I might use it in the future. But I usually do the range tests and I roll up zero, and then I do my 0 to 100% charge recordings. It's perfect timing. I mean, it's, you know, I have the car drained down to true zero, so it works for me, but this location wouldn't work for that. Anyway, I don't know what you're going into next, Dominic, but I just mentioned range test, and I did two of those recently. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or am I throwing off your OCD by taking the show out of order?
No, it's okay. You're doing good. let me just set you up here.
I knew it.
So I don't have this even scripted out or anything. I didn't do a whole lot of scripting last night. So you have a Bolt EUV in your possession or you had in your possession. Like I was going to say the Cadillac of electric cars, but there is actually now a Cadillac of electric cars, so we can't call it that anymore. But see, the extra long Bolt EV is the EUV, and you've had that for this week, and you did some, I don't know, what'd you do? You did some charge testing, some highway range test, 70 mile an hour range test, and we have some proof of, or some documentation of how that went.
All right, so you're jumping the gun here. That's a Bolt EV. So oh, I had the EUV for a week and then followed up with the EV. The funny thing is I had both of these vehicles reserved for me to do range tests and charging tests with last year. And 2 days before I was supposed to get the EUV, GM announced a recall. They shut down all the vehicles in their media fleet. So I was 2 days from being able to do it last year. It took me literally a year for them to open because it was in June of last year, I think it was. So I finally got them. They opened it up, and I was like one of the first people to get them again because I kept pestering them about it. So I did, yeah, the range test on the EUV and the EV. We don't have those videos up on Inside EVs. I'm going to give you a little hint at least for the EUV. Did really well. Did 231 miles at 70 miles an hour. Now that has an EPA range rating of 247 and the highway EPA range rating was 223. So I beat the highway range rating, didn't meet the combined, but it's really not supposed
That's not
to
bad.
Meet the combined.
That's good.
I don't know. Did really well. And then I did the charge recording on it 2.5 hours. I mean, I like the Bolts. They're great cars.
Right.
Yeah. They are just horrible DC fast charging vehicles. Horrible. They max out at 50 kilowatt and at like 40% state of charge, they start ramping down. Why is that? Why can't it take 50 kilowatt, such a low amount, more than to 40% of the battery? I mean, by 50% state of charge, I think it's like at 40 kilowatts, something like that. In any event, I mean, it was an hour and 18 minutes to go from 0 to 80%. But I'll have those charge recordings up later. I really like it for an affordable electric vehicle. And it's still, both of these vehicles are great EVs if you don't need to do a lot of road trips. And you know what? There's a lot of people that don't need to do a lot of road trips. So they're going to work for a ton of people. So that's the Bolt EUV. Next up, I get the Bolt EV. Now, this is that picture I took yesterday. So for the first time in 10 years, I ran out of charge with an electric vehicle. And, you know, I mean, I'd be embarrassed if I did it just driving my car somewhere. But I was doing the range test. And as everybody knows, Kyle and I really try to push it. And, you know, we want to squeeze out as much energy as we can get. And we're actually very good at it, you know, about knowing when the car is going to give up, about squeezing out every mile. He and I have done this for all the electric vehicles. We know what the pedal response is when it's really getting down there and everything. So, I'm like 1.2 miles from the electric vehicle charging station. And all of a sudden the pedal response starts getting squishy. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm a mile away. No problem. You know, and because you could usually get a mile out of it. But if you notice on that road, it's uphill.
Oh,
it's only a slight incline. And let me tell you, even slight inclines are enormous problems for electric vehicles when you're down at the end, because, you know, ever ride a bicycle up a hill? You know, it's yeah. so much harder than on flat surface. Well, the car has that same issue. It has to work that much harder. So, 0.2, not even a quarter mile after I got the first like indication that I was having trouble, it just, and I pulled over to the side of the road, wouldn't go. I turned it off, powered everything down, sat there for like 10 minutes. So usually the battery gets a little bit more, turned it on. It went into gear. It rolled about a foot forward and then just started rolling backwards. It was done. It was done. And so I'm like, geez. So it's 93 degrees. Oh. You see the sign in the background, New Jersey Turnpike. That's where I do my range test. I just got off the turnpike and it's like a mile to the Electrify America charging station. And, so it's like 93 degrees. I had to park it on the side. I climbed over the guardrail because there's trucks whizzing by me. This is Route 18 in New Brunswick. It's a major corridor for trucks and everything. And they're just flying by me. And so I climbed over the guardrail and I waited for the tow truck to come. And
smart move.
I had to be towed for the first time since my Active E in 2012. And you know, since then, I've probably logged over a quarter of a, maybe 300,000 miles on electric vehicles and have never run out. But yesterday was the day and I'm not going to say how far the Bolt went because it did really well. I was like amazed. And that was my problem at the end. You know, when we do these loops, I had another, I was going to call it where we were at and head to the Electrify America charging station, but there's a 5 mile loop I can do. It's like 2.5 miles to the turnaround, 2.5 miles back. I said, I'm going to do it one more time. So I made the loop off the turnpike, did the 5.5 miles. And as I was coming back, that's what, I should have bagged it a little bit earlier, but, I didn't. I said, nah, I can make this. I was getting cocky because I've done it so many times. And like I said, I know when a car is going to run out. The Bolt does not give you one. And another thing that really angers me about the Bolt, as you know, because it's such a good car, but GM made such mistakes that drives me crazy. First of all, they don't give you a numeric state of charge value. So you don't get to see 5%, 4%, 3% on the car. They do have the estimated remaining range, which I was watching it on this, the road trip. It was locked in. It was every mile I drove, it was going down, and it was true to the percentages and everything. So when you get down to 15 miles remaining, it shuts off and it just says low. And like, that's when you need it the most. Now I know that they probably turned it off because they feel it's unreliable. When the battery gets that low, it's hard to predict how many miles, and they don't want to misinterpret, but no other electric vehicle does that. They all, right, you know, show you where you're at. So it says 15 miles remaining, and I would have, and I was at that point 15 miles if I did the extra loop. So I'm like, I can do it. And, you know, if it was counting it down, and it would have counted it down quicker, or if I had a numeric state of charge value, I would have had more tools in my toolkit. And instead I ran out. Now, what I did have that I was ignoring was the Bolt does show you how many kilowatt hour is consumed in that, since the battery was fully charged. And I know it has a 65 kilowatt hour battery. And when I decided to do that loop, it was at 63.8. So I knew I was getting to the end. But you know, the thing is, as soon as that number hit 65, that's when it powered off and shut down. And I thought that 65 was the total capacity. That's what Chevy always said. It's the usable capacity. Because I on the EUV, I stopped the range test at like 64.6. And on the Bolt, when it hit 65, that's when it was lights out and it just rolled over and stopped. So interesting things that I learned, but I was, I pushed it too far and I paid the price.
Damn. So how many miles did you get out of it altogether?
I don't want to say for the Bolt EV yet. I want to leave that there. But I'll say it this way: it outperformed even its combined EPA range rating.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And that's 259.
And this is of course the newly refreshed fresh battery pack.
Yeah,
all that stuff. So, and you drove the original Bolt EV, right?
Oh yeah, many times. Kyle and I both range tested that. I don't remember exactly, but I think it was 230, Kyle. 230, 232, something like that. So the new one, absolutely, I got much better result. But what I will say, it was perfect range weather yesterday. It was like 80 degrees, no wind. So it was like ideal. The battery was nice and warm. There was no wind. The turnpike was nice and open. There were no times where I had to slow down or anything. It was like a perfect day for the range test. I wish I could have that every day, you know, when I do all the EVs, but just pushed it a little too far and kind of ruined my day.
All right. So if you want to know how far you can actually push a Bolt EV, like the literal from 100 to nothing, I guess tune in next week. You'll be here with us next week, Tom?
Yeah, I'll be around.
Oh, sweet. And also, I think we'll be talking about the Rivian R1S next week as well, right?
Yeah, I guess we will. The embargo is the 6th, so that would be next Thursday, I guess. I'm not.
Yes, Wednesday.
So yeah, it'll just be out.
Sweet.
One last thing I want to just chat about really quick is my damn Lightning. I'm so like, they can't get it shipped out. My Lightning was built on May 18th. It was done. I got the email confirmation.
Right.
It was done.
I thought you'd have it by now. It's still in July.
So yeah. So, so I've contacted Ford and reached out to them, and it's a carrier issue. They don't have enough drivers to drive the vehicles to the dealerships. They're stockpiling vehicles now because there's a shortage of drivers. I could really push it and say, look, transfer my dealership to a dealership in Michigan and fly out and pick it up. But yeah. The guys here at my local dealership have been so good to me, and they're selling to they're selling their Lightning at MSRP. They're not marking them up, that I want them to get the credit for it. And I would hate to switch the dealership on them. So it's just sitting there, and it's been hopefully it's charged. Hopefully it's not at a super low state of charge. But we're 6 weeks now where it was done, and it's just sitting in a parking lot, and it's crazy.
Well, the Puppy V would like to say that he's got his Lightning or their Lightning. I'm not sure if it's
when was your build date? Do you know? Did you look online? Because mine was May 18th. If it was after that, like, it could be a regional thing. They can't get drivers. And I'm not far here from Detroit.
That's true. So,
I know Nikki got hers. Nikki and I were talking. Yeah. And okay. We reserved them like at the same time, and she got hers a while ago. So it's just a matter of they can't get the vehicles to out. Oops.
Wow, that's crazy. Oh, a Hummer owner has been waiting 11 weeks for the same issue, according to Matthew Alexander on Facebook. So I guess it's sounds like an industry wide issue. Transport trucks, man, what else can go wrong, man? Everything. All right. So anything else we want to talk about there?
Not for the Bolt EV. That's pretty much it.
I did want to mention, if anyone's wondering, Kyle is in Munich, Germany right now. That's why he's drinking beer. It's later on in the afternoon where he is. So cheers. So last week,
Give me 1 second. Let's pull up that one comment. Eric Youngdale said, you can just fly to Detroit and pick it up yourself. No, I can't. No. You know, manufacturers cannot deliver vehicles to customers. I know when they have some manufacturers do like the factory pickup, that's still completely organized through the dealership. They have it all worked out, but legally Ford can't hand over a vehicle to me. So okay. I could transfer my dealership to a dealership in Ford in Detroit. And then they would be the dealership that, and then, hypothetically Ford would deliver it to the Detroit dealership because it's closer, and maybe they just have somebody drive it there. I could do that, but I don't want to cut out my local dealer who's been good to me and is one of the few dealers that are selling them at MSRP. I want to do a video of my pickup. I want to give them a little credit and say, look, these guys are doing the right thing. They're selling it at MSRP. So, I'm going to bite the bullet and not do this and fly out there because I want to give these guys credit.
Oh, that's so nice. You're such a nice guy, Tom.
What's the right thing to do? Yeah. So few dealerships are selling the car at MSRP. And these guys are selling it to everybody in MSRP, not me because I'm, a journalist or whatever. They're same with the Broncos. When all the other dealers are marking up the Broncos, if you order a Bronco there, they'll sell to you at MSRP. So it's Maple Crest Ford here, nice. Right in New Jersey and in Mendham. If anybody's local in New Jersey and you want to get a Ford that other dealers are marking up, just give these guys a call. If you order the vehicle, they said they sell all their vehicles at MSRP if you order it. If it's sitting on the lot, like let's say I were to cancel my Lightning now and they would still get the allotment, then they're going to mark it up because it's an inventory car and whatever. I think that's fair. But if you order it, there's no markup.
Nice. Oh, I see that comment. Someone was just saying they saw a Hummer EV in Florida, which is kind of neat. I haven't seen one here yet at all. I did see an EQS here in Tallahassee, which is really kind of bizarre. I was like driving, and it's like almost close to my street too. And it was like, it looked like there was like a professional driver, like a limousine kind of driver guy, like behind the wheel. I'm like, I wanted to stop and pull over and get the lowdown, but yeah. In traffic.
Another thing really quick. I mean, Kyle Dunn. So one person said, I think that's what TFL did. And that is what they did. They transferred their dealership to a dealership in Michigan. So they got their truck sooner by doing it that way. And that is exactly what they did. It just doesn't feel right to me because these guys here have been doing a good job and I want to make a video and give them a little some good press out of it. So I'll wait a little bit longer.
Right on. All right. So I guess I drove something last week too. I'm the one that doesn't get the cars, but I got to go on a little trip last week. I went to Park City, Utah, care of Cadillac. And I got to drive the Cadillac Lyric, 2023 Cadillac Lyric. And it's pretty interesting. So I got there in the afternoon. If y'all have any questions, like just hit me as we go along. But so I got there in the afternoon, and I got in the car. Apparently, we would have been able to take the car for like 20 minutes or 30 minutes for a quick drive. Like the big drive was the next day, but I got in the car and I was just like looking through the menus and touching everything. And by the time I was done, there was like no time to drive the car, so I had to wait until the next day. But so the Cadillac Lyriq is an interesting vehicle. So it's a large, it's like bigger than an e-tron. It's a good size SUV. It's not as huge as, you know, like a Tahoe or anything, but it, you know, it's a pretty big SUV. And, you know, when we think about Cadillac, we think it's a luxury segment, and it's, you know, I think it looks sharp from the outside. I think it could pass for a luxury vehicle from the outside. No problem. It's got lots of, Cadillac heritage. It's got the vertical lines and the lights, the stacked LED headlights. And it's also got the shape of the grille on Cadillacs. It's kind of like the crest a little bit. It kind of mimics the Cadillac crest itself. And so the Lyriq has a big glass front with laser etched lines that some of the light comes through, and has a specific light up signature when you walk up to it to greet you. And it's kind of neat. So the big shield, they call it, is like, looks, it's like a glass version of the Cadillac crest, which is on the front, and the lights up on the front. And I'm trying to think, it lights up on the front, right? And the Cadillac crest is also on the back. On the back, you press it and it opens up the back hatch, which is kind of cool. And there's also a Cadillac crest on the side on the charge port cover. So you press the crest there, and the charge port kind of judders down. It's not really super well controlled. There's a couple of issues like that with the car, where it can be improved with software updates, I guess. And it's built on the Ultium system, so it's capable of Ultium software updates. So first impressions, it's like a luxury car. So you get in, and the design of the interior looks good. I've got a little bit of video here I can share. This is from Cadillac's channel. See if I can get this done proper. It's just like a minute long video. I'm not sure if it's going to show us what we want to see, but one pedal driving, right? So there's the Lyriq on the screen if you're watching this on YouTube or Twitch or Facebook or Twitter. That's the screen. It's got a nice 30-inch screen. So you get in it, and you know, it looks nice. It's got the big 30-inch screen stretching across. It's like a nice white interior. You can see the seats are ventilated. It's got little things for, there's speakers in the seats themselves. The massage has their own little massaging button. It's a lumbar massage. I don't think it's quite the whole thing, but anyway, it feels great. But so my point is, like, so it's a luxury vehicle. You get in and it looks good, but when you start touching it, it's not quite luxury style. You know, there's like a lot of like knurled edges on things, and you want them to be like weighty, kind of like metal feeling. And they're metal, but they're metal. It's metal coated plastic, basically. So it feels like lighter and doesn't feel quite as, you know, I want to feel quality. So there's a big selector in the middle there as well of the car and the console, like a big round glass looking thing, but it's not glass. It's not crystal. It's like plastic. And it, you know, it just feels a little lighter than I would have liked to. And like some of the temperature controls on the center console, there's a little bit more like a wiggle and stuff. So I'm kind of being nitpicky here, but not quite, but it's also built to a price. So it starts at $61,700 before destination. So it's built to a price, but it's not like full blown luxury. That's going to become next year in the, what they call the Celestique, which is going to be a huge sedan. They're going to hand build and sell for $300,000 a copy. So this is much more affordable, and you know, it's pretty nice. I liked it a lot. So let's see what else. So what it has heated ventilated massaging seats up front with driver and passenger memory. It's got wireless CarPlay and Android Auto, like you would expect, glass roof with a power shade, AKG studio sound system, which I thought was really great. It's got ambient lighting, programmable ambient lighting, high and low. So you can do the lower part of the car one color, the upper part another color if you like. What it doesn't have is a rear wiper. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. Cadillac says that, so the spoiler's at the top of the rear glass, and it's supposed to you know, speed the air through there enough so that it doesn't need a rear wiper. But, you know, people who have Ioniq 5s and Kia EV6s kind of complain about that. So people have been asking what the deal is with that. So, yes, someone's saying Lyriq all-wheel drive is cheaper than Model Y long range, which is true. So the all-wheel drive isn't out yet, but it's going to be like a couple thousand more. And that's coming out this fall. But if you, I mean, they sold out of the initial run and also the first year of production. So if you order now, either rear wheel drive or all wheel drive, it's only going to arrive like the second quarter of next year, either way. So it also doesn't have a frunk in, which is, you know, I don't know. Apparently the Chinese version has a frunk, at least in the rear wheel drive, which is kind of bizarre that the one in China has this little tiny frunk area, but we don't get that, but that's fine. It's got a lot of storage in the back, so it's like a SUV style. That's good. And I'm just playing here with this video. I'm playing the same video over and over again. I kind of would like to go and change that, but let's see what else.
Where's
is driving
Martin when you need him,
right? Where is Martin when we need him? So looking else, it doesn't have, or it also doesn't have a physical glove box button. So you have to go through the menu, which I liked actually. So I went through all the menus and, you know, it was very, the screen was great, nice and, it just moved nice and smoothly. Everything worked fine like that. Didn't hesitate. Go ahead.
I think you can voice activate the glove box also, Dom.
Okay, yeah, I didn't. That's one thing I meant to ask them about, like using the voice. I didn't use the voice the whole time. I you know, I used the controls in the steering wheel mostly when I was driving, like for volume and different things. But I didn't use voice. Also, the menus has like a, so there's several menus you can screen, you can swipe through, but you can also like touch on a tile, like for you want to go to settings and you want that settings in the very first menu, you can touch it and move it to the first menu. So that's, you can configure all that kind of stuff yourself, which is really nice. I really like that idea. And it was really intuitive. One of the most intuitive softwares I used, I think it was even a little bit better than the Hummer. So,
you know what it's interesting, Dom, so many people, and we just had a couple people here ask, when can you get one for a range test? Honestly, even on my YouTube channel, I've had so many people ask me that question. When are you going to get a Lyriq for range testing? More so than what I've had people ask me on other vehicles. So there's a lot of interest in this vehicle, more than I would suspect, honestly. I'm surprised that so many people asking for the range test on this specific vehicle. And so must be interested in it.
Yeah,
we'll get one as soon as we can. We don't have any. It's not on our chart yet because GM hasn't given us a date on when the vehicles will be available in media fleet. So if people are like waiting for it soon, you could take a little break because it's not coming anytime soon. We don't have one on our board yet to range test. Maybe Kyle does, but I know we don't.
So the next day in Park City, we went out and so we got, it was like a couple hours in the car basically. So not a whole lot of time. We had a co-driver. So I got like half of that. But, you know, I got to drive it in some. So let's just start with one thing. So it's got a laminated acoustic glass in it. And it's got an active noise canceling system with six microphones inside and accelerometers on the front suspension. So it could kind of read the road and measure what you're hearing and then totally like cancel that out. So the inside is like quiet, like. I haven't, I believe Kyle says the e-tron is super quiet, and I haven't experienced that, so I cannot say, but this thing is so quiet. So we had, without any stereo on, we were just driving and had the massager on, and I could hear the motor in the seat massager. it wasn't loud, but I could hear it, and it was like annoying. And so I ended up turning the massager off because normally I would have just turned on the radio and it would have been, you know, it's like a very small sound. It's not like it's got a noisy motor and as a massage or anything. It's just, it's that quiet in there. It's like amazing. Anyway, so the Cadillac Lyriq also has five-link suspension front and rear and independence in the back. So it rides like, I thought it rode really good. It doesn't have active suspension. So it's not like the peak best ride it possibly could be, I think, but they did what they call it? They had a they have an expression for the tech sheet right here. The suspension is five-link SLA, that's short long arms in the front with passive plus premium dampers. So they're passive dampers, but they've got extra valving. So they call them passive plus, you know, premium dampers. They're really good. I thought they were great. Like we were driving on like a concrete road with little grooves in it. And besides like being super quiet, I'm like driving on this road and I'm like, wait a sec, this should be super loud. Nothing. Well, I could tell I was on the road. I could hear a little bit something, but not like you would expect it normally. So that was great. Rough surfaces. Yeah, it felt good. Felt like the tires are always like flat on the pavement. Lots of good grip. See what else you want to know about it. Handling dynamics, throw it into a turn. It's like got a 50-50 weight distribution. So it handles flat, goes and you throw that into a turn. There's maybe a slight bit of understeer, not much. The whole thing's basically going to plow if you like hit, go into it harder than the tire rubber can hold you on. You know, if you start sliding, it's going to slide pretty evenly. And then halfway in the turn, like in a pretty hard, kind of a hard slide like this, I just floor it. And I was kind of hoping that it would help rotate, like kick the back end around a little bit, but there was nothing. It just kind of, it, you know, it took off. But the ESC, the what do you call the ESC, Kyle? What's the, you muted?
Yeah, just electronic stability control, traction control.
Right. Yeah, all that kind of kicks in, so it keeps you, you know, stable.
Well, I think sort of it would be dumb of any automaker to set up a car as oversteery. So any car to the limit, you know, easing up into it is going to lose front end grip. It's a luxury SUV. It doesn't really matter. But I will say, you know, applying more throttle with ESC on isn't going to give you much of a story. You really got to have everything off and just leave it to driveline controls to get a feeling of how they're balancing their power front to rear axle.
Right. But this came across as, you know, just pretty balanced, made for a normal person. Like I threw it into a turn like harder than I think anyone's really going to. Normal people are going to drive this car because it's not a sports car. It's like a big, I forget the weight, it's like 6,000 pounds, I think, around there. So yeah, it's like a really super enjoyable. The wheel felt good. It didn't have Super Cruise enabled. So the cars that we had were like two software iterations away from what's going to be delivered, and deliveries could be happening like any day. So the embargo drops, I think, on Tuesday. And so if as soon as this week, or maybe within the next few weeks, delivery should start, but it should come with, I drove the rear wheel drive Lyric, not the all wheel drive. And what else? Oh yeah. Sorry, I'm getting a little confused, but I want to make sure I get out there. But
let me interject here. All wheel drive is coming at the end of this year. The rear wheel drive is going to be the only one that's available at launch. Right. But the all-wheel drive will be available later this year. I think it's like $2,000 more. That's it. Something like that, which sounds like a really good bargain to me.
Right. Robin Yateman asks, floating. I think she's asking about the ride, because like old Cadillacs, you think of, you know, kind of a floaty ride. And it wasn't floaty. It was like, it was felt connected and planted, but just soft. You know, there's like a nice softness to everything, like all the any of the harshness of the road, it pretty much ate it up. It's pretty sweet. Let's see, Tom, the charge door on many vehicles seems to hesitate when opening and not smooth. Was that the case for you? Yeah, that was the case. I think there's a little, I have it on my phone, it's not here. I have a little video I push the thing and it kind of like shutters down a little bit. And they had an issue like this on the inside, so on the interior, there's like this nice little. Sort of like a jewelry box drawer that comes off in the center console, and below that is another door that should open up, but it wasn't enabled because they were having some calibration issues with how it opened on that software issue. The cars that get delivered should have it. Same with the Super Cruise. Our cars
that just seems like a massive oversight to me. Why would you do this huge press event with a software update going to customer cars just 2 weeks in advance Something's off here.
Right. They're definitely not ideal for sure. Yeah. It was like, I had the same questions in my mind. You know, I didn't actually voice them. I guess I should have.
Yeah, you should have hounded them on that. I would have been like, look, you invited us to drive a car. You're telling us it's not what it's actually being delivered. What are we even doing here? Like, you know, what's the point?
Right. Yeah. I guess I'm, yeah, I don't know what. John Check asks, does Cadillac Lyriq have a heat pump? I believe, yes, it has the same very sophisticated system that the Hummer has. So it's a heat scavenging system, so it's super efficient, like in the Hummer. And I think all the Ultium cars will be like that. So I don't have correct numbers for the range. I only had like an hour behind the car. It wasn't filled up completely when I started, but it did seem to stick pretty closely. I use more energy driving it than what it had predicted I would use, but I was driving it pretty hard for the most time as well. Let's see, what else did I want to mention? Power was great. So the rear-wheel drive version gets 340 horsepower, 325 pound-feet of torque. Plenty of power. That was great. Not. I mean, the all-wheel drive's 500 horsepower. It's going to be a monster. So this is rear-wheel drive, about 0 to 60 in about 6 seconds. So plenty quick for a big SUV. But the all-wheel drive should knock at least a second off that. So that's going to be even more amazing. It's got the 102 kilowatt hour usable battery. So this is like, I think it's 10 modules. So half of the, or is it 12 modules? I'm not sure. I better not say. I'm not sure if it's 10 or 12 modules, because the Hummer EV gets 24 modules, what the truck does, but then the Hummer SUV, I think, gets fewer modules. It gets 20. So this is half of one of those. I'm not sure if it's the 12 or the 10, but 312 miles of range, and I think it should be pretty close. I'm looking forward to your range test, Tom, because I think you're going to get pretty close to that. Yeah, anything else? Oh, I got to meet Roman from TFL when I was there. That was great. We got to chat a lot. And he has a nice video out too. I didn't shoot any video when I was there. So if you want to watch a nice walk around video, I would suggest checking out the TFL video. He points out a few things I might have missed and I didn't mention in my write-up. So we have my write-ups on the Inside EVs. You can just type in LYRIQ and it'll come right up and you get the lowdown. But yeah, if you want the extra, it's kind of a short video from TFL, so it won't take a lot of time, but he does a great job of, you know, just showing you some of the touches around the car.
Yeah, Roman does a good job. And it's funny, Dom, when you were there, I was with Rivian on the R1S first drive, and I was with Andre from TFL. And we were talking about, we're like, yeah, Dominic's probably hanging out with Roman now. And Andre and I teamed up, and we took a car together because they were putting two different, you know, two people in the same car. So we spent, you know, 2 days together, driving together and everything. And we were talking that you guys were there. So it's funny to hear you mention it now.
I wanted to ride with Roman during the ride, but he got matched up with somebody else. And so I rode with a guy from, what was that? What's that British show? The big British show, car show. It was huge a while back. And then they changed the guys all left. Man, I'm totally spacing today. You know, the big one.
Top Gear.
Yeah, it's a very interesting gentleman. We had a great chat and driving, talking about Top Gear from the old days and stuff. So any questions about the thank y'all. Any questions about the Lyriq? Tom?
Do you know, do the rear seats fold flat in the back?
Not quite flat, no. Okay. Down quite pretty big, and when you know it opens up, it's there's a lot of space in the back. It is 28 cubic feet, right? With a cargo volume is 28 cubic feet with the seats up, and then folded down, you get 60.8 cubic feet. And the another point: the rear-wheel drive doesn't tow, but the all-wheel drive does, up to 3,500 pounds. All-wheel, four-wheel disc brakes, of course. We drove vehicles with 22-inch wheels on them, and the wheels and the tires actually were made specifically for Cadillac Lyric, like the tire and the molding. It's all set up for. So when you do your range test, I'm kind of curious if you get the 22s or the 20s, because I know the 22s are set up for range. So usually the 22, you get a range penalty when you go for the bigger wheels. But I'm kind of curious about how that goes. So Kurt,
Dom, do you know if they're including the cost to install home charging like they do with the Bolts?
So you get a choice. You can get 2 years of free EVgo charging with no limitations on charging time, sessions, length, or anything. Or you can get, I believe, $1,500 towards installation of a home charger that does not include the charger itself. So you supply the EVSC, but they come in and you can get up to $1,500 of work done installing that on them.
Yeah, they do that with the Bolt EV and EUV also, which is great for first-time buyers. Yes. And it's also great that they give you the opportunity, because if you're not a first-time buyer, you already have home charging taken care of. You say, nah, don't give me that. Give me the 2 years on EVgo. So it's actually a good – it's nice that they offer that. If you do need home charging installed, you're better off taking the installation, because you're not going to spend $1,500 on EVgo in 2 years charging, unless you drive like Kyle, across the world. But it's definitely a better deal to take the home installation.
Right. Or maybe if they're even, Kyle's got to go. Are we going to lose you, Kyle?
I'm good for another little bit. Just figured we'd, kind of move along.
Oh, okay. He just landed in Germany. So he's like, let's talk about the meaty stuff. We talked about Lyric too much.
Yeah. Tim McDonald asks, no frunk in the Lyric. Yes, no frunk in the Lyric.
And that's crazy, because it's way big enough to be able to fit that in there. It's got a really long front hood. It's not a short, stubby hood where you could say, well, they I understand why they couldn't package it right. The Lyric's got a really a decent size long hood. So it's really weird that they don't have that.
I recall someone said now they didn't have the frunk on the North American one because it has a bigger onboard charger, because it has up to 19 whatever kilowatts AC charging you can get on the Lyric, which is a lot.
So it goes to the maximum 80 amps possible for J1772.
Right. Yep. So Curtis Schneider asks, Genesis GV60 versus Lyric, which would you choose? The Lyric is bigger, it has better range, and it's right about the same price. I'm not sure about performance. GV60 might be quicker, but the Lyric, I haven't driven the GV60. That was you, Tom, that drove the GV60? Or Kyle?
Speaking of GV60, my mom gets hers literally, I think, this week.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. Cool.
I'm not sure which is quieter, but I enjoy my time with the Lyric a lot. And I mean, I like the GV60. It charges probably faster, but it doesn't have the range like three. I'm pretty sure the Lyric will get you 300 miles.
Don't know that it's going to charge faster, Dom. With the Ultium pack, and you see how aggressive GM is with the Hummer EV charging. We don't have the charging curve yet.
But it's not an 800 volt system, isn't it? It's 350 volts, and you can't do more than 540 amps.
Right. Right. It peaks at 190 kilowatts and charging.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was a little over 200. Okay.
Yeah, and
my guess is it's going to be 350 volts ish nominal, because I think the Hummer EV might even be 330, and it's basically two of these packs slapped in.
Right.
Because when you combine them, they go like 680 volt nominal. So then you're 340 volts on this at 500 amps, or some of the Signets will do 540 if the car will request it. You're not getting huge speeds on it.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I liked it. I'm not sure. So, the Audi e-tron is right in the same price and features kind of neighborhood. So, I think that's another vehicle to cross shop it with. And it's the same. It doesn't have the range of the Audi, but the Audi may charge faster. I'm not sure. That could be just...
No, the Audi only does 150 kilowatts.
Right, but it holds the charge high for like a long time though, right?
Flat, but it's thirsty.
Right.
Yeah.
So, we own one. It's pretty thirsty.
Right.
And that's really important. What a lot of people don't always factor in is how, it's great to fill the battery up really quickly, but how efficient is the vehicle? What does it do with that energy? And when you're talking about how fast a car charges, that has to be included in the conversation. You can't just say, oh, it goes to 80% in 18 minutes. Well, yeah, that 80% might take it 200 miles, but in another vehicle, that 80% takes it 250 miles. So I think we really need to talk about miles per minute added and the how many miles you get in that 80% charge rate. I think that's really important.
It's just so hard to do because it depends on how you drive and how fast you're going and your terrain, and it's a whole nother, but I totally agree. It's just, there's no way to future predict what the range of the car is going to be.
I agree, Kyle, but at the same point, the charging session is impossible to predict too, because how cold is the battery? What, you know, what you're charging, the station you're on, is it limited? So it's like, there's so many factors in here that we need to help explain all things included. You know, like when we put out a charging curve, when Kyle does a charging curve or I do a full charge recording, we need to make sure people understand, look, this is what we did here under these conditions. Don't think that you're just going to plug in, you know, you're going to pull up somewhere and plug in and get the same thing. I mean, the winter, the battery temperature has such an effect on how fast a car is going to charge, you know, and as Kyle even pointed out in some of his videos, some of the charging stations are limited, even though they're advertised for 350, they don't deliver 350. So there's so many factors, and that's why charging requires so much explanation. There's just no simple way to explain it. But, I think that needs to be included at some point where people understand miles per minute has to be something that gets included in that, because that's really what you care about. How far can I go after how long I've stayed here? Not just, oh, my car's at 80%. Well, what does that mean? How far will that take me? That's all I was trying to say.
Right. In Cadillac's language here on their spec sheet, they use miles per hour. So when you're charging at home AC, so 7.7 kilowatts, you get 21 miles an hour of range an hour. Or if you got the 80 amp circuit, you can get up to 52 miles in an hour, which is really great. But for the DC fast charge, they put it as like up to 76 miles of range in 10 minutes of charge time, which I would imagine is from a low state of charge, but they don't say exactly what that is. So it's kind of like nebulous, I guess is the word I would use. Hard to say exactly what's going on there, but we should move on and talk about some news real quick. Your time is counting down. So the 2024 Hyundai Ioniq 6 was unveiled. And so this is like the biggest Rorschach test I've ever seen, I think, at least in a while. Our writer Dan was talking about it, and he said, we could say the Hyundai prophecy did not fully come true. Because the Hyundai Ioniq 6 was first came to us as a concept car called the Prophecy, and now it's available as, so I'm pulling it up for you on the screen so you can see what we're talking about. And sound off, and that's good. Right, so this is the Ioniq 6. Well, it'll pop up here in a second. So yeah, there's a lot of reactions to this car. So it's on the EGMP platform, so there's not a whole lot of specs we can talk about. It's a sedan, so it's going to get better range, I guess, than the Kia EV6 or the Hyundai Ioniq 5. But here it is in all its round glory. And so this was supposed to come out last year at some point, I think, but they held it back to do some restyling. So this, I don't know. Tom, what's your impressions? What does it remind you of?
So to be honest with you, I need to look at this a little bit closer. I'm not really in love with it from what I've seen so far. The front actually looks really nice, but this is another form following function vehicle. I like to see it in person. I know we say that a lot on the podcast, that sometimes vehicles in video and on pictures, just they look differently when you see them in person. You know, that rear is definitely odd, but at certain angles when I look at it, I'm like, yeah, no, I can live with that. That looks okay. So I want to see this in person. I do like the front end. I'll say that.
Okay. I mean, there's been quite a mix. At first, I was like, what? WATF. Yeah.
It's like a Mercor XR4 Ti. It reminds me of in the the rear, you know, how that used to slope down.
Even the front is not that different from the Mercury, actually. I put a tweet out last night with a Mercury showing the front and back.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. No, I said we're going to be talking about the Ioniq 6 tomorrow, but then I used pictures of the Mercury in my tweet. And then the next tweet had the actual pictures of the Ioniq 6, just having a little bit of fun. So I've been looking at this thing more the last few days, and I guess I like it more than I did originally. I'm like, it's growing on me already, and I like to see it in person. But what bugs me is, like, so you've got these like rounded surfaces, like on the back third quarter, the back haunch there, with it's just got like curved body pieces like meeting together, and just I don't know, I just don't like the way it looks, and also like the way the cut line in the roof is for the doors, it's up higher than. I don't know. It's just little things. I think engineers took their liberties with the design. I'm sure the designers are pulling their hair out. What are you doing to my car? But the inside looks nice.
But I also like when people push the limits and try to do things differently rather than just all cars are starting to look the same. You know, right. And
it's true.
I like that they went and like went out of their comfort zone a little bit and did something that they knew people were going to kind of look at and be like, really? So let's see it in person. You know, I think that's really important if we, you know, if we see it in person.
Kyle, you have any words about this?
Yeah, not great.
Okay.
Not great at all.
So and it's really interesting because that's like the reaction that I had. But then I look online, there's a lot of positive sentiment out there.
Yeah, too, some people love it. To me, it looks like just the rear is terrible. But again, we've learned people buy ugly cars, so it shouldn't affect it. We know it's going to be awesome underneath. From a technical standpoint, this thing is going to rock. And that seems to be what matters to a lot of people.
Yeah, I expect it's going to be a great car. Like an elongated Porsche 911, I've heard first gen CLS is compared to. There's a lot of comparisons, like, but you know, we really need to see it before we get, you know, super critical about it. It's like when the Kia EVS came out, I did not like, but you know, now after some time and seeing it in person, it's like, yeah, actually, this is Kia EV6 is pretty sweet.
And that opposite has happened to me. I feel like I really don't like the EV6 at all anymore. Yeah.
Okay.
But again, it wouldn't stop me from buying one. I think it's an incredible car underneath. EGMP is just stellar.
Right. If you want to get a better look at the Ioniq 6, you can go to we have a thread on the Inside EVs forum. I've collected a few of the different video walkarounds. So you can get it's kind of better just look at the pictures that we saw to actually get like a video with somebody like going over all the elements of the car in person. It looks a little bit better there than it actually does in these like static pictures. Right. So this is going to compete with the Tesla Model 3, I think, pretty heavily. And the price is reportedly going to undercut. We don't know what the price is, but it reportedly is going to undercut the Tesla Model 3 price. All right. Oh, one other thing I remembered about the Escalade. They didn't mention this, but I did notice that the Escalade wheelbase is actually bigger than the the Lyriq wheelbase is actually bigger than the Escalade wheelbase.
But Escalade has massive overhangs.
Right. The overall length is Escalade's going to be bigger, but just like the interior, just having like a big wheelbase helps you with the interior space. And the Lyriq had great interior space, even in the back seat, despite the plunging roof. 6'2", sitting behind myself, lots of leg room, lots of headroom. It was great. So back to what we're talking about now. Anything else we want to talk about? The Hyundai Ioniq 6, basically let's move on to the next thing because
we can assume it's going to be a stellar car. It's going to be world-class, best tech in a vehicle, just but ugly.
Right. So Volkswagen unveiled a concept as well. It's like electric sedan debut week here. So it debuted the ID Aero concept. The presentation was held online in China, where the production version will be launched in the second half of 2023. That's next year. And it's going to be produced separately by two different joint ventures in China, but also it will be introduced in Europe and North America. And it'll become Volkswagen's global EV flagship model, apparently, which is Interesting. It's a sedan flagship. I don't have a picture of this up. I should share you a picture of this. So it's on the MEB platform. So it's got a lot of the, you know, the like the ID4, it's got a lot of the characteristics of that that we're used to. Let me see if I pull this up so everyone can see what we're talking about. And there we have it. And there's, yes, Brandon Turk. Sorry? Oh, we don't have it.
You said there we have it.
Right. Sorry.
When you're doing, there it is.
There it is. There's Brandon Turkus from Motor One showing us, right, going over some of the design. This is like a short video, and you can find this on Inside AVs as well. Initial impression. So it's like almost 16 feet long. Range is an interesting thing. So this is, it's a large car, so it can fit the bigger battery of the MEDB platform, which is 111 kilowatt hours, I believe. So it's supposed to get 385 miles or 620 kilometers of range. That's on the WLTP cycle. So it will be shorter, like, I don't know, 350 on the EPA, maybe, in that neighborhood. It's not going to be cheap. And I don't know if there's, we have a whole lot of other information about this, but I know, Tom, impressions?
I like how it looks. I mean, you know, I'd welcome back some more sedans. You know, I'm yeah. sick of just everything coming out being SUVs. So yeah, I you know, we need to learn more about it, but I think it looks pretty darn good, and it's going to have long range. We don't know anything about really charging, if they're going to do anything special with it. You know, with a big, that's going to have a big battery, so it better charge better than an ID4. But I think it looks really nice.
It's pretty conservative, you know. It's like very simple, very clean lines.
It's how it should be. It's a Volkswagen. It's going to fit in perfectly. You know, what's funny is I'm in, you know, Germany right now, and a vehicle like this would be perfect for here. You see tons of, every third car is a Volkswagen. Would love to see a wagon version, just extend that roof line a little bit. And we're right there. Things great.
Did they mention a wagon version about this? I almost feel like... I'm not sure. I think
they showed it at like at one of the auto shows like four years ago. I was actually there, and it looked really cool. You know, so, but then we haven't heard anything about that.
Frankfurt 2019, when they did all of the different cars they could build on MEB display.
Yeah. Oh, that's
I like that one a lot.
I still think they need a Volkswagen Beetle built on MEB, and Jordan already has his license plate picked out, which is going to be ME Beetle, so he's ready to go when they make it.
Awesome. Right on. Yeah, I'm not sure if there's anything else really to say about this.
If I get one, like, it'll be EV Bug,
right? I'm not sure if there's a whole lot, you know, we can really say about this. It's a concept. It's like super clean, looks good, but, you know, I don't even know when.
Just
when
make it a wagon and call it a day.
Yeah. So,
both versions. I want the sedan too.
The concepts, you know, both versions. The concepts were called the Vision. So ID Vision, and so the wagon was like Space Vision Space or something.
Space Vision, yeah, or Vision Space. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So yeah, we could see a Volkswagen. I think this might be the ID7 when it comes out. People were suggesting it could be that. So ID7, then the wagon would be like ID7 Tour or something. Yeah. Norman says boring look, and I agree. It's kind of a boring look. At first I was like, what? This is like nothing. There's like nothing going on here. There's like not a whole lot of interest, but I mean, that's the point, I guess. You know, keep it clean, simple, and, you know, enjoy the light touches that they have. Anything else? I'm trying to look at our time. Oh, we're up to, or just about up to our time. I'm not sure if we want to talk about anything else.
The Goodwill.
Right, a little bit of Goodwill. So the Lucid Air, it's the fastest production car up the hill at the Goodwood Festival of Speed that was going on in the UK last week. It went up in 50.79 seconds. It's like a mile.
But do we know what other production cars were also running against it?
I think it's the fastest one. No, I don't.
No, we don't know. Pick a 911 Turbo S, and I bet it would be right up there. Look, I don't know if you guys saw. Did you see the video that Ben Collins, who was the Stig, did with Tim Schmee 150? In the Lucid, did either of you see that video?
I didn't see it. I know it's on Inside EVs. We have a post.
It was really great. It was eye-opening into the dynamics of the Lucid because Ben was very open as someone who's driven everything about how the car performs. He needed ESP on to activate launch mode, quickly turn ESP off once he gets moving. The car is so incredibly fast. It's soft, but because it's well-balanced, it can be. So he's chucking it into the corners. They're literally catching cars on the hill with this thing. It's a missile. It's totally insane. And just watch that video. You learn a lot about the Lucid and Shmi's video.
Right. Sweet. I need to watch that then. So yeah, 50.79 seconds. So remember that number. So there was another car there called the McMurtry Automotive. What is it called? McMurtry Spearling EV. So we saw that last year, and it's a fan car. So it's got some weird downforce fan induction thing going on.
It sucks itself to the ground.
Right.
It's the Batmobile. Just call it the Batmobile.
It's like a baby Batmobile. It's like one person car. It's like tiny. But it's officially the fastest car ever up that hill. So that's faster than the Volkswagen IDR with Romain Dumont driving behind the wheel, which is like, so it did it in 39.08 seconds. That's more than 30,
I mean, it was insane. The cameras couldn't keep up with it. I mean, you watch the footage.
It looks like it's on like 2x speed, the video. And it's not. Like, it's just, it's a freaking missile. I give the driver a lot of credit. You know, I mean, it's a narrow, winding course. I know there's no way I would have the reflexes to do what he did. I mean, maybe you, Kyle, you're used to driving faster than me, but I mean,
there's no getting used to something like that.
It's like, you know, driving insane speed on this tiny little tight course. It's just nuts. I mean,
was insane. The car is crazy. And I just want to know, how do we get one? Because that is just the craziest freaking thing on the planet. I really hope they run Pike's Peak with it, because it could just demolish everyone.
Oops. I'm getting a call from my dealership now.
Oh, sweet.
I'm going to take it live.
Okay. All right.
Hello. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Good. It's actually better because your lightning's here.
My lightning is there?
Yeah, it showed up.
All right. I'll be there in like 10 minutes. I'm on a podcast now. I'm going to leave early and come over and pick it up. You're actually live right now on the internet. They can't hear you, but I'm talking live because I'm doing an EV podcast. And everyone's asking me, when are you going to get your lightning? So, guys.
So, shout out to the dealers.
It's dealership. What's three miles from my house.
Ask what the dealership name is.
So, oh, hell yeah. I want you to do it as quick as you can. He just asked me, do you want it today? Like I don't like the answer was going to be no. So this is Dan Kalal from Maple Crest Ford in Mendham, New Jersey. So Dan's an awesome guy. If anybody's here in New Jersey and they want a Ford, come up to Maple Crest and speak to Dan.
All right. There you go.
All right, Dan. Take care. I will see you later today. Bye-bye.
Hell yeah. F-150 time.
All right. So I guess we know what you're doing today and this weekend.
And Ford's website, you know, it's supposed to track everything. I checked it this morning, and it still wasn't on a carrier. So if you guys are waiting for your lightning, don't follow that, you know, like it's the Bible, because it lags, because it was still saying it's not even on a carrier, and it must have been on a carrier at least a couple of days ago, you know, because they take a while to get here. They stop at different places. But anyway, got my truck. Tom. I'm going to be picking it up. Podcast's over. Kyle wants to go. I want to go. Call it a day and let's leave.
Tom, what you should do is just call him back and just see what state of charge it's at right now. So at least you know if the battery's been well cared for or not.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to drive there. I'll be there in 15 minutes. As soon as we end this, I'm just going to drive over and
congratulations.
And
that's so exciting.
Cool, guys. Congrats. You can tell I'm a little excited about this. As I've said on the podcast before, you know, I've been driving electric vehicles for 13 years now. And I have wanted an electric pickup truck since day one. And today's the day I'm going to get it. So I'm happy.
That's incredible. Can't wait to see some Twitter posts about it. We'll share it around. And yeah, can't wait for all the videos to come.
Super. John Check says he wants to see a live stream, Tom. So I don't know.
I'm not good at live streaming.
Okay.
Okay. I will take video and I'll post it up later, but I'm not good at live streaming. I'm not, okay. I'm not Kyle yeah. like that. I got to
film your delivery.
I've never done a live stream, so I even have to learn how to do the damn thing.
All right. So E-Tripping with Adam Gebert says, go get that trek. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please, please, please give us a thumbs up. We need those thumbs ups if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ending.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.